Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Let's Get Physical Media, and it's about music as a physical object. And our guests for this episode are some people who know something about physical media. The one and only Matt Miller.
Hello.
And of course, and I think you are the grand champion of podcast episodes, Derek Zanetti.
Greetings.
Four or five time guest at this point.
Greetings from Earth to Earth.
Yes.
It's good to be here.
All right. So, say something for yourselves. Introduce yourselves. Explain who you are.
Well, my name is Matt, too, just like yours is, Matt.
Yeah,
and
that gets confusing.
I live in Harrisburg in the middle of the state of PA, and I'm here today because you and Derek helped me make 150 copies of an album I'm going to release on cassette in like a month or something. So I'm here for the physical copies as well as the conversation about the physical copies. I always do goofy stuff with my physical copies. I've made an album that was a CD in an 8x10 picture frame of my brother and I when we were like 4 or 5, when I worked at a Photoshop and I just print out 8x10s and take picture frames and sell those as the artworks. The other thing I did was like knapsacks, little drug bags with tapes in them and stuff. So I always try to be like a little bit like, there's a reason to buy this because you can just listen to it. But if there's like a little bit of like special thought into it, or like you can see the fingerprints all over it or something, then it's like kind of, then I feel a little bit better about people actually like paying money for something. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And what were you going to do with these cassettes then? What's the plan?
With the special
he says,
well, I had Derek on the phone for a while. I was like, can you split the
hours,
tape?
For hours. Yeah.
Can you split the tape apart? Because we're putting dried flower petals that, like, floral shops around us let us just sweep up their back room. So we're taking the tapes apart and putting actual flower petals back inside of the tapes once we squish them back together. That's my this one. And then everything else is pretty standard.
The music's amazing. I think the music's great. You did a great job with it.
Thank you.
You're always a you always have a flair for pageantry. When you put out, I love it. I love whenever a new release of yours comes out and there's a lot of pageantry with it. Like, it's not just like buy this thing that I made with my music in my mind. It's a picture frame of me and my twin brother in this weird multicolor flower pattern background digitized thing, and it's awesome and it rules.
I mean, it's how I can justify like asking anybody to give me their money. If it's a little bit stranger and a little bit like, well, this isn't like every other tape I have. This isn't like every other CD packaging or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, that's actually a little bit special. There you go. I don't know.
I like it.
I like it too. Yeah, I mean, this fascinating. It's also very labor intensive, I guess, or?
Yeah, it can be. So this is 150 is a lot for me. Typically, it's like, yeah, I'll do like 20. Like, I got 3 weeks of shows. I'll make like 20. Because I don't have the picture frames. Or, my sewing. I'm out of thread. You know, stuff like that. But this one, it's like, we got to do it now before all the flower petals rot away to nothing. So, like, you got to actually make them all at the same time. So, I'm excited.
Are you, like, pressing them in between, like, book pages or whatever? Like, are they, they're
No,
flat.
We found this really strange way to microwave press flowers between two pieces of like ceramic tile, and it like paper thins them.
Oh, really?
Sucks all the
moisture
out of them, and it's just like ready to go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's weird to like zap something like that too, which I think is fun. I don't know. And then half the pageantry is me like being able to like call Derek and be like, listen to this dumb thing I'm doing, because like
that'll never work.
Yeah. Always telling me
that'll never work. And it works.
Yeah, and it works. So, yeah, there's a couple things I want to sort of unpack there. One is, if we're talking about music and worth and value and physical media, and the other part of that, equation, I think, is intimacy. Is that, you know, having that meaningful connection to both maybe the song, but also the creator. And so if somebody buys these cassettes, which they'll be on your Bandcamp, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'll link on the website, and maybe I'll sneak a link into the tag of the MP3 for this, you know.
Cool.
For the people, for the really ephemeral podcast listener who really wants to explore the tags and the bitrate of the compression and stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, you know. I've thought about, you know, there's that Hard Times joke about the podcast on vinyl.
Yeah, right?
You know?
JLB Offer probably did a few podcasts on vinyl at this point.
I think that his spoken word albums are basically just were that before podcasts existed. Yeah. High Priest of Harmful Matter is pretty good, though. I will admit, talking about the Frankenchrist trial, which again, that was a moment of sort of physical media short-circuiting mm-hmm. really badly.
Yeah.
You know, the Giger painting and the obscenity trial and... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the one where they confiscated, like, every pen in his house, right?
Yes.
They, like, confiscated his writing utensils. Like, he's not gonna just walk to the store just to mess with them. That's crazy.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, thinking about, you know, this idea of not only you getting... Well, it's also DIY, right? It's also, which does not mean, you know...
Don't improve yourself.
Don't improve yourself, or... I don't know. Hey, can you get it done for me?
Can you DIY something for me? Yeah, I'll get right on the DIY. I'll get the DIY volunteers to come over to my house and work for no money, and we'll just shit out a bunch of stuff for you. No problem. We'll get the DIY, you know, magic to work for you.
And didn't you also, Derek, get somebody asking you to DIY something for them?
Yeah, I got an email from a kid in a local band, and he said, "Hey, man, I saw that you've been doing a lot of DIY projects. I was wondering if you might be able to whip me up some DIY stickers. We'll pick them up on Thursday." And I said, "Really? You'd like me to DIY some stickers for you? How does that work out? I want somebody to DIY some stickers for me."
Yeah.
It was an interesting conversation.
Maybe he's like a Jeff Koons type, like a factory kind of guy. Well, it's my thought. So, you know, you guys just do
DIY.
This
for me. Yeah.
Yeah, like Andy Warhol shit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Have people paint your paintings for you to sign on the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or what I like is, you know, the oxidation paintings that he did with
the urine.
With the urine, yeah. I mean, that could be famous people's pee. There could be Bowie pee hanging on a gallery wall somewhere.
We're gonna clone that shit someday.
Get Bowie up. Get Bowie back, but yeah. So pressed flowers again, I think the family portrait is so. Amazing, you know.
Yeah, I actually started calling everything I do the one and only Matt Miller based on the fact that there was going to be a picture of me and my twin brother. And that I have, like, the most common name in the world. Like, that's not true. I'm clearly not the one and only Matt Miller. Yeah, and then the visual of that to be, like, right there to it, too. And then I just stuck with it for, like, subsequent... records after that, but at first that was the only reason I called it that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, to like sort of tie it into the fact that I was playing everything and that there was somebody, my identical twin, sitting next to me in this picture, and it's like, is that a copied thing or is that an actual picture? Just to blur that silly line.
That's great. So you're explaining to me in my basement the unique way that you recorded this record? Well, what's the record called?
Oh, or okay. Well, called? Yeah. Well, the band is called Small Pollen, and that's me playing bass guitar and some synthesizers here and there and singing, and then my friend Craig playing drums, and that's it. So all those are all just bass guitars. There's no guitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why I was checking out your like octave pedal and stuff, because that's all it is. It's like the same Big Muff you have, plus like another like Boss distortion, plus a pitch shifter up, so that I'm just playing like bass chords the entire time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and that's because, this is funny. Oh, and but the record's called El Cortizone La Corazon, is what the tape itself is called.
Okay.
But Craig and I were playing, I met Craig because we had a mutual friend, and he was drumming for her. And then they asked me to play bass, and then we had like a bunch of shows lined up, and she just skipped town. So they were like, well, you still want the shows? And I was like, sure, I'll still take the shows. And then I was like, well, that's kind of like, I bet Craig was looking forward to, I barely knew him still. And I was like, I bet he was looking forward to playing too. So I'll just like whip some songs together so that he and I can both still play the shows that were booked for her band, right? Mm. And I was like, well, I'm just going to stick with bass because that's what I was doing anyway. Just I'm going to keep playing bass because that's what we already were comfortable doing. And then from there, I was just like, okay, how can I sound like I have a guitar even though I don't? That kind of thing. But yeah. So the way we taped it was we did the bass guitar and the drums to a 4-track cassette. And then we put those onto like GarageBand, like into a file. And then ran all the overdubbed basses and synths and singing and like ugly noises and stuff through the tape player without pushing play, so I didn't have to keep like lining anything up or blah blah blah, and just going through it for a new track, and then had everything on one computer, on one laptop that was a friend of mine's. He was like, you can use it until I leave town, until I move. And I was like, okay, I'll hurry up. And I got all the tracks and everything, started mixing it, and then he was like, okay, I'm ready for that computer back. So I took my other computer, took the tracks one by one back through, played it through his computer, back through the 4-track, and then into a Sonic Maximizer, which is like another like analog like pusher kind of thing for like metalcore bands and stuff. I've never used it on an amp, but just for this recording, it's the only reason I got it. Like, and then that went through those two analog circuits back into my own computer, and then I just like hit record as it was playing through, and it just like real time, and then I had to go and like line it all up and all kinds of goofiness. Yeah, it was really silly. But the phrase I keep using is like, I needed the right kind of shitty sound. Like, I needed it to sound the right shitty. And I like to think it's close. It's close.
Sounds great. Thank but you. Shitty, but
yeah, yeah, I mean, I just don't want, if you're trying to do something like different or fun or anything, like, but then your drums still sound like a freaking like Genesis song or something. It's like, what were you doing then? So I just tried to make like the cymbals sound sort of like radio static in a way, but like have it like sort of like pushed and pulled around in a way that you don't typically like think a drum set is like either right in your face or it's far away. That was the other thing. All the drums to the 4-track were just like all of the mics channeled onto one track. So wow. I had no like, I didn't have to, I couldn't go back
equalize
in.
Equalize them.
Yeah, well, I could do that, but I couldn't like make the snare louder.
Yeah.
Like it was like what it was what it was going to be. And I couldn't really like over pick it. You know, it was just like an impulsive way to do it. Just be like, okay, well now it's got to sit amongst all these like phasing like frequency bass guitar things. I don't know. But it was the hardest I ever like tried to make something sound like something. Typically on my like own records, it's just like, no, that's the note. What's it sound like? It just sounds like what it sounded like. And it, you know, I never really put as much thought into like hearing it later as I did this one. So, but I'm gonna do it. I think it sounds kind of cool. It sounds like a Breeders record, I hope. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's great. I think that's fair. It is. It sounds great. Yeah. And I guess, you know, again, so then maybe we're back to maybe this sort of this intimacy. Because, I mean, stuff that is super clean, super well produced.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's been other episodes of this podcast where I've talked to people or musicians who go sort of full into the Pro Tools mode.
Yeah.
Where they don't even know if it's done, you know. I mean, not full My Bloody Valentine, where it takes 19 years to make a record of songs that they wrote the year after Loveless came out, I think, is that record. I think that's what that record was. I think they wrote those songs in 1992. And
it took that long to...
It took them 19 years to...
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Did you like that record?
I kind of did, actually. Too. I will say I like that record. That was a good record. But...
I never got into that band.
Cool.
Valestine. Sorry. You're the first podcast guest. You've been on this podcast four times now, Derek, and you're the first podcast guest I've ever called a Philistine.
I've been called an uncircumcised Philistine many times, and I take that title with pride. I'll be truthful with you.
So again, though, I think there's that intimacy of recording and that ability to, or that willingness, I think, for folks like us versus maybe the rest of the world or the two Americas or the two worldviews or the two solitudes, you know, people who can't deal with any sense of imperfection or, I don't know, like, you know, when the world doesn't live up to their expectations.
Sure.
You know, and whatever. And those people like really nice, perfect things, the consumerist thing, versus sort of what you're doing. You're saying, well, it's just how it sounds, or it's how you do it, or whatever, you know, yeah. Or even going for the right kind of shitty as opposed to, no, this has to be super clean and the drums, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no excuse or there's no reason, in my estimation, to try and make something that's already been done. Like, the Rolling Stones have already made, like, all those rock and roll records, and the Beatles have already made all those rock and roll records. And, like, if you just want to make a Beatles record, I mean, there's great templates for you to go ahead and try and, like, emulate that style of music so that you can make, like, a Britpop record or whatever. I just don't know what... I don't think that would benefit you at all whatsoever as, like, a creative person.
Yeah. Like, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I agree with you totally. We always wax on that. And I also think, like, you know, another thing is, like, I don't think that, like, a recording style, like, I don't think lo-fi is a genre. Like, sometimes it's like, what kind of band? It's a lo-fi band.
What
so
is that?
What does that mean? Like, that's not really a genre as much as just, like, a style choice. So you can... There's, like, a connotation that comes with, like, being a lo-fi band that doesn't always make sense because it doesn't mean that you all sound like Guided by Voices, you know?
Yeah.
You don't all sound like, again, part chimp. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
sure.
Yeah. And I always thought that was funny, too. I don't know.
Well, I guess it's, yeah, you know, that way that we try to make sense of music.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, ultimately, and I think this is the thing, you know, we want to talk about, too, about physical media and the worth of physical media. But, you know, we're literally just making sense of vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or how do you make sense of invisible vibrations, which, of course, in some ancient cultures, right, only the priests were allowed to make music because there was this belief that it had this transcendent, liminal, could talk to the other side kind of quality for music. Hmm. You know, and I think we're three people who've all, I think at certain times, perhaps even lost our shit over music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys, as making music, probably people have lost their shit over your music. And I'm sure that's probably a weird experience. But you're probably just, you know, just having that ancient priest experience.
Sure.
At the Roboto Project.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we talked to God on your theremin earlier today.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that hard. That's fun.
I do like that. I like the idea of capturing something wild and then having that just be the recording that you use. Like, mm-hmm. Of course it's not perfect, and of course that might have been out of tune, or you might not have hit that drum the way that you wanted to, but that's the way you hit it. And that's the way we're gonna capture it. Like how you recorded the drums live. It's great.
Do perfect. It live.
Fuck it. Do it live. And like, I don't know. Like the tape that I made, the Teenage Noise Experiment stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just love it. I love to just, this, I just made this one little verse, and it's out of key, and it's bad, and then we're just going to throw it out there and have it, and that's just that.
Yeah,
and like, I'm not going over it, I'm not going to try and sing it right, I don't want to play a different chord. I know that the C shouldn't have been there, but that's what's in, it's in there now. And this is the live recording of the weird shit that I made, and y'all can have it or not.
Right.
There's only 150 people that are going to have it in the whole world, so...
Yeah, I think that kind of expression makes more sense with like a handmade physical copy of something, don't you?
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's like, then it becomes part of the art, and then it's not so much about even like how much you like the way that sounds sometimes,
mm-hmm.
or like how much you even identify with, like, that part of that record. Like, those kind of things. Like, it just, for me anyway, like, to make a hard copy of something, it turns the whole thing into the whole thing. So it's like, I don't want to separate, like, how I recorded something with the, from what the song is, just me playing it in a room, or what it is, like, what it looks like and stuff. I don't want to separate any of that stuff. I just want it to, together, it has to make sense. So, like, for this Small Pollen thing, did you notice my trick with the other side of the tape?
Yes.
So it's like the programming is the same on both sides, except on the other side of it, everything that's panned left is panned right on side B, just for no reason. Just because there's, you got to do something different. I wasn't going to split six songs on a tape. I wasn't going to make you flip a tape.
Sure.
After like 2.5 songs.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, well, I got to think of something to do, to use the medium to express something.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, well, I do think that the songs are short enough and the whole thing just flies by like a Pixies record, I hope. Like the pacing, I hope. And like, but okay, well, there has to be a reason to listen to it more than once. Like, if there's something about it on the other side. And it is just this little subliminal, like, not for any, there's no reason behind it, but it's still, like, for me,
well, because
totally
the, because the record is cyclical, it always just continues. As soon as it ends, it starts back up from the beginning. It's so easy to just sit there with it on a loop and do art, or to sit there and read with it, or anything. Like, it's really, really good. Not to say that it's background music or earlier music or anything like that, but it's just really, really good. Like, it's always going behind you. So if you're in the house, you know, you're working on something, or you have, you know, it's great driving music.
Cool. Yeah.
They only sell like cassette players in cars.
I know, right?
Oh, come on.
I know. I think that is why I'm still into tapes, honestly. Because vehicles I had up until I didn't have a vehicle still had tape players in them. So yeah. I still had like a reason. Like, tapes never went away for me. So it's like, I still would make tapes because they were so part of my actual, like, music, like, listening process. It was really natural to me to, like, just go, oh, well, I'm just going to make a tape because I listen to tapes. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I wish, yeah. Yeah. I think that tapes are, they're the poor man's analog. They're the coolest. they're my very favorite. I feel like I waited it out until, like, other people are actually making tapes again.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Not that I'm sure tons and tons of people never stopped either.
Yeah.
Everything, and that's really cool. But it seems like there's, like, an awareness of, like, you know, of, like, even making tapes that aren't just bought from the, like, and put together by some plant and then shrink wrapped and then put in a box, and then the band opens it at the merch table and it's time to start selling their tapes. You know, mm-hmm. there's always, like I said, the poor man's analog kind of, like, vibe for me, where it's like, okay, there's a reason for this sort of intimacy and stuff.
You put it in my pocket.
Put it in your pocket. Sometimes one of my things I'm thinking about someday selling, like, white t-shirts with pockets, and then the tape
is in the pocket.
That's so the artwork is like a shirt with a pocket, like, just dumb shit like
that.
That's
great.
That's great.
I might do that someday if I could think of a shirt.
T-shirt cassette combo. I like that. Yeah, I'm with you. I had a, God, I remember when I got rid of my last car that only had a cassette player. I replaced with a car that had a cassette and a CD player, but I mean, I still have hanging on a hook in the basement by my theremin the double bag Blue Giant Eagle bag of just the tapes that I would make.
Sure.
You know, I had a little case of, like, real tapes I, you know, stuffed under the seat, but then I just had this plastic store bag with, like, and that's a great time capsule. Like, I can remember what I was listening to 20 years ago. Or next to my stereo right now is a cassette I made for the car that I owned 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was putting that on the other day, and Danelle was like, what is this? This sounds so familiar. I was like, oh, this is a tape that I had in my old Century. And it was, she's like, I thought so. And I get so into that. I don't know about you, but if you even make, like, a mixtape, like, and then you listen to the actual album, sometimes I'll hear a song and I'm expecting to hear somebody else's song.
Absolutely.
On that album, because it's so ingrained that no, this follows, R.E.M. Lotus follows Portishead. Sure. It's just the way the world is.
I think there are bands that, like, I can't put them on mixtapes too because of the way their own albums flow. Mm. I'm like, well, if I put this on there, then I'm going to expect the next song. Like, especially Pixies, who are, like, my favorite rock band ever. But the beats between their songs are catchy, too. Yeah. Like, I know, like, how long it takes between, like, Subculture and D equals R times T. So it's like, if I were to put that first song on there, then I would immediately expect...
What?
Nothing can follow it except for D equals R times T because of the way the record is, like... put together, and like this, like I said, like this, the gaps between songs on those albums are catchy to me.
Yeah,
and I tried to do that with the Small Pollen thing too. My friend Matt Leshinsky mastered it for me, and I sat with him, and I was like, and we were like sequencing it together, and he was like, this song would end, and I'd be like, okay, make it a little bit, you know, a little bit further, or a little closer, a little this, a little that. And he's like, where do you want it? And like the song would end, and I'd be like, pounding in my head and go, there. And he'd just like hit it. And he'd be like, is that it? And I'd listen back and listen for the beat and be like, yeah, that's it. And he was just like, I'm not hearing what you're hearing, but okay, that's fine. All right. But I'm like, no, I'm sure. Like, it's like, it goes squeak, tape hiss cuts off, gap, tape hiss comes on, song. You know what I mean? It's like, you gotta pay. I was like, okay, it's here, there. It was really funny. Because he was just like, I don't know what you're talking about, but. That's what you said.
There's also about, like, a mixtape, how you mentioned, and, like, the ordering of a song. There's something very, in my opinion, very romantic about when somebody hands you a mixtape, because they went ahead and they played it live on the tape, and then they stopped the tape. And they went and they found another tape or another song. They had to fast-forward the other tape to find the one song on side B, you know, track 8 on side B that they wanted to be the next song on your mixtape. And it was just like a very labor intensive, and you had to write them all down. And I always like to write the, you know, not only the sequence and when, you know, it's track 1, track 2, track 3, but at the end of track 4, you're at 12 minutes and 9 seconds.
Oh, okay.
And like, you know.
Oh, wow. That's...
I really liked it. And I really liked, I mean, decorating the tape and like writing on it, like October mixtape, lots of Smashing Pumpkins. Sonic Youth and, you know, Superchunk, because that's what side A is, and then side B is all, you know, something completely different or whatever. But just like how I'm feeling in that moment. I mean, I only made 8 of these copies of these tapes for my 8 friends that happened to also like weird music in 1997.
Yeah.
And you know,
the thing that I used to, this is my killer move, and I'm putting this out there, you DIY guys, I don't know. My mixtapes were called Matt's Mucho Metal Musicorama.
Sure.
Because, of course, it was the 90s. And what I would do then is I would wrap the cassette case in duct tape and take a nickel, because the nickel has that little lip on it, and rub it so that the duct tape would be scored, so that you would really get a sense of the ridges, and the tape case would kind of be sticky.
Nice.
That was the thing that I used to
do. That was your signature move.
That was my signature move.
That's good. So if you make a cassette tape release, would you do that to all of them? Do you know what I mean? Like make a run of and do that to each one of them?
That might be labor intensive.
That might be labor intensive, but how many people are going to buy Theremin Drone Metal cassettes? If I'm only making 20, dude, I'll put on a record and then it's done.
Yeah. But once you get those dumb ideas in your head, then it's like the only way that like the art of it can continue for me sometimes is to be like, well, I gotta go figure out how to get 20 more free picture frames to keep like
doing it.
To keep the thing alive of it.
Sure.
Rather than just being like I got a bunch and I'm done with it.
Yeah.
And let's move on. Like it's always been a way for me to like live in that process of it a little bit more.
Excuse me.
Cool.
And I mean, you know, and is it also making virtue out of necessity and all of that? You know.
Yeah.
I'm currently, which makes me think about, you know, also maybe the power of limitation. I'm currently agonizing over this book proposal that I've been working on. You know, I've had this manuscript done for a number of years now.
Yeah.
And I wrote a proposal that I really didn't like because I was sick of the project anyway. And people were like, this is interesting, but doesn't really fit our sound or whatever. And I had this very nice meeting with this person who's very interested in the project. And I'm, you know, I have no limits, right? I just have to write this thing. And then I also wrote this conference proposal, and it had to be 300 words. And the title had to only be 80 characters. 80 character title, 300 word description. Yeah. I got that done in 40 minutes because I kept doing the word count, and I was like, okay, it's 297, it's done. It makes sense, and it's 297 words. The end.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, I don't know, write some pages. Let me know. And, like, not having a target, too,
sure,
can almost, as much as you think a limitation is a, you know, limitation, but just knowing, oh, it's, I have to do this now. I have this yoke on me or whatever. That becomes...
The album I made with the picture frame was recorded on a Boss loop pedal. This loop pedal that was like, and I recognized, I was like, you can do 5.5 minutes if you don't erase anything. If you let it just run, you can do a 5.5 minute song. It's not bad. So then it's like, and that's infinite tracks on a loop, on a digital loop pedal with no ability to mix after the fact, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's endless amounts of tracks, but once the track is laid down, there's absolutely no way, like, to get, like, if you do the first guitar and you do, you know, the first stem of everything, and then it's time to do like a keyboard solo, and you have it tweaked too high, and this keyboard solo just is twice as loud as the rest of the song. The only way you can then do it is to go back and play those drums again to match that level, and then to match, like, and then, like, you have to just keep doing these, like, layers on it to where it started to sound like this, just like. Shitty Phil Spector, like, ghost of itself, just like layers and layers of the same track to try to get it to be like, okay, it's mixed now to where, like, I'm communicating, right? But you would have infinite chances to do that, but only one chance, like, once it was on the pedal, you couldn't mix at all. So, like, that was like the perfect, like, sky is the limit, but this guy's like right here. And that just silliness like that is inspiring to me, just because, I don't know, because then I can always be like, yeah, that was a really fun way, like, that was a really, like, different way to approach it. And then it's no matter what, even if you're going to do the same songs over and over again, then it'll always, that the way you record it and everything will always only make sense for that particular project. So I'm always doing shit where I, like, will take, like, at least one song from the last one I do, and then apply it to the new way that I'm recording stuff, because the song is going to change just based on the approach to fit, like, the approach of all the songs.
Sure.
So, like, I'll always try to take, like, at least, like, parts of something from a different one, and then re-record it in to match that style of it. And it's amazing how, like, different it, to me, like, just the song feels just because it's recorded with different like, limitations and shit in mind. Yeah, it's always fun.
Wow, that's great. So, Derek, I mean, the mixtapes that you've done, you know, and the second one is coming soon?
It's being mixed right now. Yeah. It's called Mystic Wonder, and it's a concept record about the Holy Spirit and miscommunication with the Holy Spirit.
Which happens.
Yeah. I called Matt, actually, when we were talking about making his cassettes, and I said, this is what I'm doing. I'm talking about, like, church experiences. And he left me this voicemail. He left me this, like, 2.5 minute long thing about his experience as a kid going to church, and I made the tape. And, like, yeah, it's awesome. And it's just it's a lot of samples, a lot of weird drum machine stuff. I found all those old Casio keyboards at the thrift store, and I bought them all.
Sure.
And I just started to make, like, this really, really weird, like, they all, even though I'm hitting the same C, they all sound very, very different.
That's cool.
And it's cool.
I remember, just quick, I remember how you sent me, you were telling me about it, you sent me something else, and then you sent me a voicemail of you talking about your church experience. And I was like, I didn't put together that it was for a project or anything. I was like, what the hell? Like, why did he just send me this, right? And I was like, how do I respond? Like, what am I going to say to this? And then I was just like, fuck it, I'll just send him one too. I'll just have a conversation with it. And yeah, I didn't even know it was for anything. I was just like, I could have guessed, but I was like, the only thing I can say is just to do it too and send you what you
it was awesome.
my take on it. Yeah, that was fun.
We made all these tapes in your living room. We made them all down in the dining room, and
yeah.
my local buddy printed up the stickers. Cool. And we sat there with one of those metal toothpicks, and we picked out, hand peeled all the stickers off the sheet and put them on the tape and bent the, you know, took the cardstock and folded it and made the record, it, you know, the tape inserts, and it was great. It was really, really fun. I like it. I just like to do it. It makes you feel good. Like, you go away inside your head for a number of hours, and then this thing is done whenever you're done. Mm-hmm. And, like, you made it with your own hands. And I think there has to be I don't know, it's valuable to me. Like, it's valuable to me to see a band play live or to see a musical thing that isn't, you know, contemporary and isn't popular and isn't something that you would just see on, like, you know, a television show or some, like, on a commercial or whatever, and then they also have, like, this really unique piece of medium that they, you know, put the record out. And we were talking about that earlier. That band Fucked Up put out an 8-track a few years back, and they didn't make very many of them. Maybe a couple hundred. I can't say.
It was like 150 or something like that. Yeah,
very, very, very limited. And, like, 150 people bought them. And if you want to listen to those songs, better get your ass to the store and buy yourself an 8-track player.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I think it's cool. Like, they were like, we made this art. We think that it's good. If you want to think that it's good, the only way you can listen to it is on an 8-track player. I thought that was awesome. I loved it. I mean, I like the band enough. Not enough to spend all that kind of money on an 8-track, but...
Yeah. Which reminds me, I need to order a belt to fix my 8-track player. Not that I own that fucked up thing.
No.
Or any 8-tracks for that matter, but I have an 8-track player that needs a new belt, and then I will
and
have
then
a functioning
excuse.
A-track.
Yeah, then that's the excuse to get the A-tracks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what, when we were talking about, we were like, I bet most of the people that bought those were like, well, before I push, you know, purchase, I better see if I have an 8-track around.
Uncle Frank has an 8-track.
Uncle Frank has one in his garage. Yeah, when he works on the lawnmower. I guess I could just take it over there and
listen to it
there. Yeah, and I love that about
they're thinking about your record. They're thinking about the music that you make. How am I going to listen to this?
They're thinking of, like, how it could fit into their life without going out and buying
it. And you're just not clicking on your phone and listening to it immediately.
Yeah.
Like some Nine Inch Nails record or some other, like, horrible shit.
Yeah, and honestly, for me now, it's like this weird thing where... I don't know if you guys had this experience, and maybe I'm just an extremist. Maybe I'm just a fundamentalist, you know, kind of. But if I get something purely as a download... I have a really hard time. I mean, I have a USB stick that I shove in my car's center console that, you know, has all my music on it for traveling around now, which is nice because it's not the plastic bag. It's got like 6,000 songs on it, you know, which is what you need for my 20-minute commute to work is to choose between, which is the other failure, by the way, I think, of digital media is if we were talking about sequencing. Damn it. Why did nobody with any software expertise who designed a player that had a shuffle function, why wasn't there like a big red button on that screen that says, I want to listen to the rest of that album right now?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you finally like hear like Mr. Greaves about the Pixies and like, yeah, I want to hear the rest of Doolittle. No.
Back on shuffle.
But for me, like, if I get something like, probably from my 30th birthday, which was coming up on a decade ago, I think somebody gave me an iTunes gift card and I used it to get that No Age album, the first No Age album, which, you know, everybody's, oh, that's the best thing ever. It's like the second coming of Sonic Youth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've listened to it yet.
Yeah.
I downloaded it. I own it. Haven't heard it. I haven't gotten around to it in the last, like, 10 years, if that was 10 years.
It's just not special.
Yeah.
Because you do everything on the internet. You can go ahead and buy groceries on the internet. You can go ahead, book a hotel on the internet. You can go ahead and tell somebody you can find love on the internet. You can buy cigarettes from Japan for $21 a carton on the internet. I mean, you literally can do everything on the internet. And, like, music is supposed to be for me, it's supposed to be a different experience. I want to hold it, and I want to look at it, and I want to read the words, and I want to see. I mean, remember whenever we were kids, like, if you wanted to find out about other bands, you just read the liner notes of a band that you actually liked, and they thanked all the bands that they were on tour with. Like,
sure.
Hey, we'd like to give a shout-out to the Bouncing Souls and Anti-Flag and, you know, all these other bands. Like, wait a second, there's other punk bands other than NoFX?
Right.
Cool. Now I know that about Lagwagon and No Use for a Name and, like, you know, Swinging Udders and, like, all these other bands that I learned to like and love and know. But, like, before, I just got, like, I didn't know. I was like, hey, you should listen to this. This is called punk.
Right.
Tight.
There's a June of 44 album that lists all the other projects that they, like, were in or, like, currently were also playing in. So there was just a list of other bands. It didn't say necessarily that's what it was. It was just a bunch of other bands. And it was like just basically just words. And I was like, what are these bands? And then when I looked into it, it was all like spin-off projects of the four guys from June of 44. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. Like, I still love that to this day. And that's when Beagle Club would put out records, it would always say the other bands that everybody else was in. So, like, the more people that were in the bands, then the more, like, the bigger your list of other bands. But it was all people that were on that record. I always loved that idea. And that's only from a hard copy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I found out about, like, Hoover and Rex and Everlasting the Way and all those dope, like, other
mm-hmm.
June of 44 bands.
You can still go to the Exchange in Squirrel Hill or in Southside or in Oakland and open, and if they have, you know, an old Operation Ivy CD or an old Minor Threat CD, they still have the mail order sheets still in the liner notes.
I miss those.
Where, like, you can go ahead and you can unfold it, circle the records that you want, add up the math yourself, plus the postage, and your mom either had to write a check or you had to be, you know, bold and brazen enough to send cash through the mail.
Yeah.
Walk to the post office and get a money order.
Yeah. And then maybe they got your envelope. And maybe they got your order, and maybe they'll send it to you. And most times they did. Like, I can remember getting stuff from, like, Go Kart Records.
Yeah.
Or, like, who was the Get Up Kids on?
Doghouse.
Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Vagrant.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Vagrant Records. And they had the 5 years on Vagrant, or Side One Dummy, or any of those record labels that had the bands on it that I really liked. And there's just a whole other ocean of bands that you had no idea that existed. And, like, well, if you like, you know, June of 44, then you'll love Shipping News.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and I guess we're talking about how, I mean, it's obviously a lot easier now because you just click on something else. But, like, just the idea of being like, I'm going to keep that band name in my head. And then if I'm ever at that, if I'm ever at Plan 9 in Virginia again, I'm going to remember to look for a Hoover record. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. And that, like, just, like, was, like, more of this, like, fun, like, strange treasure hunt kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. I love that going to other cities and their record stores mm-hmm. and thinking, like, I got to remember what I own.
Yep.
And what I can buy 20 minutes from my house.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And not buy either of those two things.
Yeah.
I would do the same thing when I go to Bloomington, Indiana, because it's a college town, and there's, like, three or four amazing record stores right there in downtown, and they would have, like, all those Planet X bands. You know,
okay.
you can get a Planet X sampler for $3 or whatever. You know, you used to say, if it's not cheap, it's not punk, and you know, you'd be able to get CDs for $2 and $3, tapes for $5, records for $8, and you'd be able to go in landlocked vinyl in the middle of Bloomington, Indiana and find it. And then I found out about Lumpy Records, and I went in there and I found all these other bands, like the Coneheads and Lumpy and the Dumpers and all these other bands that I really, really, really had no idea about. But they're like, if you like this weird indie punk label, you're also going to like this other weird indie punk label.
Sure.
And all the dudes that are in these bands are in 1,000 other bands that all are fucking awesome too.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. I just love the, I love the texture of it and to feel it and to touch it and to look at it on my wall.
Yeah.
And I just, I appreciate that. And I don't know. Maybe I'll just grow up to be some crazy hoarder with a whole room full of a bunch of bullshit, but I'll jump that hurdle whenever I get
there.
Sure.
Actually, if I could read something out of a book.
Yeah.
I'm going to read something out of a book. I'm going to read something out of From the Age of Earthquakes, A Guide to the Extreme Present by Shuman Bashar. Douglas Copeland is the primary writer and Hans Ulrich Obst. And what this book is it's an update of The Medium is the Massage by Marshall McLuhan for the internet.
Okay.
And I taught it in class this semester, and it freaked my students out, but then most of them wrote their research papers about it. So, but, you know, and talking about this, you know, you can do anything on the internet, and but then again, doing things on the internet is nothing. And so there's this page, it's just this, like, office area under construction, or whatever. And it says, "But the more you offload your memories onto hard drives and onto the cloud, the more your memory becomes, in a very real sense, artificial. Technically, someone who spends all day in front of a screen has no memories of their own except for going to the fridge for a Coke." That's spooky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the phrase, in a very real sense, artificial.
Yes!
That's yes. That kind of shit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You're really not having a... it's not an authentic experience. If you're there with your phone or whatever, you're just trying to capture through a lens what's happening around you. So you're really not being fully present. You're really not fully experiencing what's happening around you. And then if you're just always there looking for something better than what's happening around you, you sure aren't going to have the will or the spunk or the charisma to go out there and find that thing.
Yeah.
You know, to entertain yourself or to find the thing that's better. You're just going to go ahead and click a button on your phone. Oh, I wonder what maybe Matt's life is better than mine. I got to go ahead and see what he's up to. And
then Matt's
either one of you. And then the other Matt, one Matt's in Harrisburg and the other Matt's in Reed and Square on their phone. Like, I wonder what Derek's up to. Maybe his life is better than mine. And then you do that with a web of, you know, 3,000 different people that you happen to know throughout the entire world or whatever. And then everybody, of the 3,000 people that you happen to see in the, you know, of your quote unquote friends list, obviously somebody's doing something that's much more spectacular than you're doing. And that always gives you this really false sense of missing out. Like, how come I'm not at the beach getting fucking my feet rubbed and drinking pina coladas? I'm here in a swamp of seasonal depression, want to blow my fucking head off, and all it keeps doing is raining here in Pittsburgh.
And my feet hurt.
Yeah, my feet hurt. They got me on this new diabetes medication. Fucking whatever. It sucks. You know, my life is shit. And then there's old Amanda over there just, you know, doing hula hoops in Hawaii. Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Or you can make cassettes.
Or you can make cassettes and just start a punk band with your friends, and even if it sounds shitty, just keep practicing and just keep on getting better at it. And then, I don't know, just keep doing that until you die, and there's no like age expiration whenever you get to be too old to be creative.
Truth.
Just keep on doing it, and it doesn't have to sell. You can just make it for fun and just for you and your friends, and just make a thing that you like and you care about. And like, I think that's way more valuable than being on like Austin City Limits or whatever, even though that would be cool. Connor Oberst, if you're listening and you need an opener for Austin City Limits next time, I know a guy from Pittsburgh who's available.
And on that happy note, I think it's time for the bottom five. Bottom five. Since you guys are not in a band, you can give individual answers. It's okay. You
yes.
don't have to agree. You don't have to agree.
Can you answer first?
Yes.
Great.
Okay. Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are we ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
Oh, wait, hold up. Do you want to do it like Family Feud? Like, you leave the room, I'll do five, and then you see how close you are to mine.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'm out of
here. Oh, shit. Oh, this yeah. is the best thing ever.
I'll try to think like you. You got to try to think like me. We'll try to get,
say, hootie-hoo, whenever you get to the fifth question.
I'm not going to say that.
Yeah. Okay.
This All right. is the best! Alright!
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Alright. Question one, though you might have fielded this one before, but I'm too lazy to look it up.
Sure.
And maybe there's a couple podcasts, there are a couple super fans out there who will know, who you said the different thing last time. Question one.
It's because people grow.
Yes, there you go. If question one, if reincarnation is real and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be? If you had to go single cellular.
Yeah. Like I would, infectious disease.
Yeah. Or illness or germ, virus. Sure. Excuse me.
Have you seen that planet Earth where those fungus spores get inside? I don't know if this one totally counts.
Yeah, okay, we'll do fungus spores, yeah.
They, like, they get into these ants, and they drive these ants nuts, and these ants climb as high as they can to get these, like, to get, because the fungus is, like, controlling their head, and they take them up as high as they can, and then the fungus sprouts out of the ant, and the and it, it blows the spores everywhere and hits more ants, and these things get to the top by infecting these ants and making them like lose their minds and go, and that is sick.
That's crazy. That is, wow, nature is evil.
Yeah, you gotta see it. It's a Planet Earth one. It's like these beautiful like panning shots of just like ant shell husks basically at this point with just these like beautiful fungus strange growths coming out of them. It's dope.
Wow.
We'll look it up. It's cool.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Question two. What is the limit to experience or personal limitation most people impose upon themselves?
Say it again.
What is the limit to experience or personal limitation most people impose upon themselves?
I think tradition.
That's a good one.
That's my vote.
All right. Question three. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory of your childhood.
Happy but somewhat.
Yes, it's not like well, that time we went to Disney World, but, you know.
Sure.
That time it rained and we baked cookies.
Okay, yeah. My grandmother would always, she would let us, like, hide things around the around her house and then like and then would do like treasure hunts like Indiana Jones style like crazy shit, and that was always super fun. Like, yeah, I still remember that.
That's awesome.
But at least that's the first one that came to my head, and that was always a rainy day thing.
Nice.
Yeah,
it is a rainy day today. Question four, and we're just looking for a numeral here, I guess.
Okay.
All right, out of the people who have seen you naked, how many do you never want to speak to ever again?
I mean, if I'm counting, like, a high school locker room...
Yeah. That, yes!
That whole fucking locker room.
Well, how big was your graduating class?
I don't know. I don't know, like, 20.
20? All right. Finally, last question. Are you ready?
Sure.
What is the strangest item you have eaten and or found in your stool? Oh, if this was a video podcast, your look on your face. Strangest item you have eaten and or found in your stool.
One time, this is a remarkable childhood memory.
Okay.
Like, you remember those, like, little, like, juice huggy things? They would have, like, the tin...
Yes, yes, the little hugs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, a little hug. I grabbed one out of the fridge one time, popped it open, and was, like, drinking it, like... And I'd always drink them and, like, look, like, go, like, look up, like, as, and, like, stand by the window so the light would hit it, and I was, just, like, come up. And I was, like, what the fuck is, like, those little dark things? And I looked, and there were, like, a bunch of, like, curled up ants inside of it, like, just, like, sealed in there. So I, like, opened it, and they were in there. They were... It was the only one, and then I went through, like, you know, it was like a case of, like, 10 or whatever they came in. It was the only one that had the ants in it. But that was pretty far out.
Yeah, so this is the second ant thing. Because
it was, like, a manufactured thing. It is the second ant thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh. Hootie-hoo! Oh, I hear him on the steps. Oh, you can stay for this. You already
need the bathroom.
Oh, he's going to use the bathroom.
You can walk in at any time, though. Okay.
All right, are you ready, Derek?
Yes, five questions.
Five questions. Sorry you've gotten this one before, I know. And there might be some podcast obsessives who used this last time. But question one.
As we grow as human beings, our opinions do change.
Matt said the same thing.
Oh, well, it's not.
There you go. Already, we're... Wow, this is weird. Okay. If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be?
If I had to come back as an infectious disease, what disease would I be?
Yeah.
Or
illness. Germs, virus, even fungus. We'll take fungus.
Okay. If I had to come back as an infectious disease, what would I come back as, other than a Republican? I guess I would...
burn.
Maybe SARS.
Ooh.
Because we really don't know what SARS was. A lot of people had said that they were worried about SARS. But,
SARS kind of petered out.
I'd say SARS.
Solid. Question two. Mm-hmm. What limit to experience or personal limitation do most people impose upon themselves?
What limits do they impose upon themselves? Can you ask that question one more time so I can hear
it? Sure. What is the limit to experience or personal limitation most people impose upon themselves?
I'd say probably self-hatred or always seeing the thing that you're making or that your thing you're doing is valueless or worthless, and it really does something to your confidence in continuing to create or to make. Self-hatred.
Cool. Question three. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory of your childhood.
I had a surprise birthday party one time where they decorated the basement in my grandma's house with a bunch of, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, like, plates and tablecloths and cups, and we had, like, cupcakes, and my aunt made, like, a Batman cake. And I remember there being a piñata, and I remember falling down the last three steps because I wanted to pretend like I was surprised at the surprise party, but I went down into the basement earlier and I saw all the stuff, like when they were getting it ready, and they told me not to go down. That's solid. Probably my answer, yeah.
Solid. Okay, the next question, I guess we're just looking for a number here.
Okay.
We're looking for a number. Out of the people who have seen you naked, how many do you never want to speak to ever again?
All of them, except for Lindsay. I mean, I don't care. That doesn't bother me one bit. Mm. We're all naked. We're all naked on the inside. All
right. So, last question. Sure. Last question. We're flying through this. What is the strangest item you have eaten and or found in your stool?
I'm not trying to get all scientifical with you or whatever, but I just figured out recently that I'm not allowed to have gluten. I did an elimination diet with that gluten. And so for a month, no bread, no pasta, no pizza, no hoagies, no cookies, no cake, nothing that has wheat or gluten in it. And then I went ahead and they said, well, now's a great time for you just if you ever wanted to just really go for it and just really put all the gluten in you to see if, you know, you have an adverse effect to it. Let's go ahead and, you know, turn it up to 11 and get real gluteny. So I got a huge thing of pasta and I got a Spack Brothers hoagie and I got some garlic bread and I just tucked myself into the table and I put it. I went hard at it. And the next day when I woke up, my stomach was an absolute mess. And I don't even know if this is humanly possible, but I could say with great confidence there were still whole undigested pieces of pasta in my shit.
Damn.
Yeah.
Sure it wasn't worms.
Yeah.
It might have been worms. I don't know if it was worms or not. But I mean, I was like, man, this thing in my stomach, this whatever's happening to me on the toilet, is not Christian, and I need to figure out what's happening to me. And I went ahead right before I flushed, and I just took a peek down into the bowl, and there were things that I shouldn't have witnessed. I think it was really frightening.
On that happy note, I think that's about it.
Okay.
again, there'll be links on the podcast, but Matt, if people want small pollen, what's again,
La Corazon.
There we go.
Grammatically incorrect.
We know.
Yeah, where do they get that?
Smallpollen.bandcamp. I will put that up soon. I still need to get the flowers and tapes, because I just got the tapes today.
So another Thanks year again, from now.
I'd say end of the month.
Yeah.
End of the month? End of May month? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
I figured it'd go up in May.
Yeah.
But I will put the songs up a little later today.
So, ooh, baby.
Yeah, you can listen to them later.
Ooh, baby.
Wow. All right. And Derek, when does Mystic Wonder come out?
They're always coming out. There's new music being put out all the time. And it's very limited. It's only limited to like 150 of them. So,
and where do people find such a thing?
The internet. It's open 24 hours a day.
You can well, we're on the there. Internet. Oh, we're on the internet.
If you go to
thehomelessgospelchoir.bigcartel.com
or afrecords@thehomelessgospelchoir. Or there's other things. If you just Google search it, it also will just come up.
All right. So our next episode it'll eventually happen, and it'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter @GonnaDiePodcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Later, meets.